going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's Hoffman's show. We're on the team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the team 980. And we're starting the show in an unusual way today with a guest. We don't do this often, but one, the guest wrote one of my favorite things that I've written in read in a while. And two, he's our friend. And three, it's a short show, so we don't have time to wait anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from the Washington Post, our friend Sam Fortier is with us, of course, the Commanders beat reporter. Sam, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. And I got to say, man, the intro when I come on and you play the soundbite, which that might have been, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
It's been a minute.
I just want to let listeners know that I've gotten right with my mom. Like, we're talking more regularly. It was her birthday a couple weeks ago.
Shout out to mom.
So I'm talking to her. We're talking more. Not that we were not talking then. I just don't remember what that conversation was. And so I want people to know.
I think that's a very fair clarification to make off the top of the show. Sam is calling his mother at a proper rate. Excellent work out of you. Also excellent work out of you in the Post today. You wrote basically like the inside story on mock drafts is one way to describe this. You went into the history of mock drafting. You talked about kind of why people love them. First of all, why'd you want to do this? And where did you start reporting this story? Because it is a thoroughly reported story on the just phenomenon that is NFL mock drafting.
Man, I appreciate you asking that. It is basically like, I just, over the last like 5 years of being an NFL beat writer, we get to March, or, you know, I'm in Indianapolis or Mobile, and I leave and I just scroll through my timeline and it's just all mock drafts. It's like, oh, well, I have prospect X from Louisville going, you know, in the 7th round of the Commanders. And I'm like, it's impossible to know any of these things, especially before free agency, but like, it's impossible to know these things now. Like, NFL teams don't know who's going to be available in the 5th, 6th, 7th round, you know, much less in the late 1st or the 2nd. And so I just was like, am I learning anything when I'm looking at the sea of mock drafts? And then I just like, I've always wanted to figure out, what do I want to say about this? And then this year I just started reading more. I went back in the archives. It was like, what is the earliest article about a mock draft that I could find? And that sent me down an extremely interesting and deep rabbit hole about like how this stuff came to be.
So what was the first article you found? Did you just go back in the Post archives, or just like Google search what's the oldest thing I could find? Like what was the first article you read about someone doing a mock draft with the NFL draft?
So we have this tool called Nexus, which basically like allows me to go back and look at, like, it has like all, you know, print stories, you know, like old newspaper stories. If I Googled, you know, it, you know, Craig Hoffman, you know, so, like super keywords, like if any articles, you know, from your childhood would come, they would come up. So I searched mock drafts, and I think the first one was like from 1981 or 82. And it was like some local newspaper was writing about this guy, Joel Buxbaum, who was writing for Pro Football Weekly. And he like would send like two books a year that were like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages. Like basically, you know, what Dane Brugler of The Athletic does with The Beast, or like just basically like he was putting the internet into these books about these prospects, because back then, like, you couldn't just Google, like, I don't know, anything? Tyler Batty.
Anything, because Google wasn't around yet, Sam. It was 1982.
Yes. But it's just like, you know, like even like example, I was looking today because like we're doing a mock draft now, and I'm like, okay, who am I going to mock to the Commanders in the seventh round? And it's like maybe this BYU edge rusher is going to be a guy. And so you're like reading about him, and I have like so many different articles and sources and Wikipedia that I can look at. And like basically Joel Buxbaum, this guy who was doing the original mock draft, was doing like, you know, a 600 player deep big board too. And so he was like putting them in these books, and him and Mel Kiper and this generation of like self-made quote unquote draftniks, like they were doing it in, you know, mom's basement per se. And like, but they were just so big, and they were such cult heroes for football fans that it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And now there's a billion mock drafts.
There definitely are. I now have done 8 after the one that Logan and I did this morning. Sam Fortier is with us here on the Hoffman Show. Of course, Commanders beat reporter for the Washington Post, but also whenever Sam gets an idea and decides to write about some wacky idea that he wants to research, you should probably read it because it's going to wind up being good. So it starts to blow up. What's the breaking point with mock drafts? Like, when did it absolutely just explode into something resembling of what it is now?
Great question. I want to say like the internet, but I don't think that's true, because I asked Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst, pretty good mock drafter in his own right, like when did you start to see it blow up? Because he got into scouting, I think, in Baltimore in 2003, and he was like, dude, even back then, like, you had to wait for stuff to come out. Like, you know, people would drop them right before the draft, or they would do it in these special sections. So I think it's just like probably – I think it's tied to the NFL marketing the draft as a thing, right? In like 2010, 2011, they moved the draft to prime time. And like it just – there's a lot of things that coalesce here. You know, like fantasy football and people wanting to be GMs and fan participation. And, you know, it's like, it's not that different from having not just a fantasy football league, but like a Survivor fantasy league, doing it for reality TV. And I just think that there's a lot of overlap here with just how culture has shifted. I'm like not smart enough to connect all the dots, but like, I think that there's a lot at play here that leads to the rise of mock drafts. And I would have to say like the GMification of sports, you know, being more focused on individuals than teams sometimes, like Moneyball. I'm sure that all of the, you know, like just more information and film being out there. I would have to say like probably around 2010 was when it really picked up. And then I think it's just accelerated since then.
Sam Fortier, Washington Post with us here on the Hoffman Show. So what good are these? And if they're not good, then why do we do them so much?
I think that why they're good is on different levels. Like, do they – like, are people good at picking which teams are going to draft which players? No. There's, like, a very, very, very small segment of the population. I wrote about one of them, a guy named Jason Boris, who, like, consistently can beat the algorithms and be like, okay, you know – and even then, it's like a batting average. Like, they're getting 10 to 12 picks right per year, which is really good. There's other people like this guy, Benjamin Robinson, who's like a DC nonprofit, data analyst. And he was like, hey, in 2018, he was watching the draft. He's like, hey, there's like an opportunity to do something to like really quantify, is this guy a steal? Is he a reach? And so he started aggregating like thousands of these mock drafts from experts, from fans, from insiders and media. And he established basically like he moneyballed it, and he was like, here's an expected draft range. So if you look at it, you know, the expected draft range for Cam Ward is like 1, and the expected draft range for Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter are like two. And then he has like basically curves all the way back. So you can really plot like the ascent of the Mizzou tackle Armon Membo or the slide of Michigan corner Will Johnson. Like you can track those things through like his data, which I think is really valuable. And it's a tool that no one else had created. So I think that there is better expectations about where guys can go now than there used to be. But also, Craig, it also comes down to mock draft speculation is fun.
Yes. Yes, it is. And by the way, if you have, say, 3 hours a day that you have to fill on the radio and two podcasts a week, one of which is with the biggest draft nerd you've ever met in your life, who used to be a football player and might be named Logan Paulson, they're great content. And I think that's where, you know, it all, truth be told, transparency to the audience. Sam and I are genuinely friends, and we're texting about this earlier. So I knew some of, obviously from reading the piece and texting with Sam a little bit, some of the answer to that question. But I think there's kind of two paths that are worth talking about here, Sam, which is there's people like me who look at this as an opportunity to do content and then learn from that content. Both I'm learning myself and hopefully the audience is learning. Like, hey, you can tell me that player X, as long as it's basically not Travis Hunter, Ashton Jeanty, Abdul Carter, Cam Ward, you could tell me basically any other player in this draft could go at, or of the first round guys, or like 5 to 45. And I'm like, sure, I could come up with some mock draft that can make that happen, and it's entertaining and it's informative. But then there's also the thing that Adam Peters talked about yesterday, which is teams do them. And that's the, I think, the other part of this that's fascinating is teams do them, to good ones, to prepare for the draft so that when they get on the clock, they've seen different scenarios before. They've worked it. They don't have to do as much in real time reacting. They can do some role playing and imagination work beforehand to prepare for the draft. And I was really happy actually that Adam talked about that yesterday. And that's actually an idea we took to take command today of, I just threw two players at Logan and was like, these two players are on the board at 29. Who you taking? And it's a different kind of mock draft, but that's kind of what winds up happening with teams throughout the process. And the good ones have done that work to prepare, and the bad ones are making it up when they get on the board and they have 15 minutes and they're having arguments in the room.
The former Tennessee Titans GM, Rand Carthon, told me that when he was in San Francisco, and he and Adam Peters overlapped in San Francisco, that one day, like, they went to the office, and it was like, it sort of reminded me of, like, a school project, but he was like, everyone got assigned a different GM, and they had to pretend to be that different GM, and you had the whole day, you know, to study the team needs and to study the board, and hey, like, whose contract's up in 26 or 27, you know, like you had to really like be that GM for the day. And then at the end of the day, they did like an internal mock draft. And my understanding is the Commanders don't do that. But to me, it's like, that is a valuable tool. Like, I think some of the mock drafts where you like open up the timeline and it's like a random dude who just was like, hey, like these are the three prospects I've watched, or the thought leader in the industry that I saw had this guy going, so I'm going to do that too. Like, I don't think there's value there. But if you're really digging in and trying to like come up with the logic behind these moves, I think like that is valuable. And so I honestly think back to like, you know, high school geometry, which I was like not very good at, but like my teacher was like, hey, if you get this wrong, that's okay. You just have to show the thought process. And if the thought process checks out, then like you can get partial credit, or you can, you know, like there's a rationale there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that if you have, like, you just don't want to be caught by surprise on draft night. These picks are too valuable. And if you have worked through the scenarios before and you know who your trade partners are, or you know who potentially is looking to move up, move down, you're not going to get that surprise phone call. You already, and if you do, you've thought through the scenarios because you've looked, you maybe had even more foresight than the GM themselves of their team. You'd be like, that team might want to trade up if this guy falls. What would it take for us to move off that spot? And it allows you to make solid, unemotional decisions because all you're doing is executing the plan that you've already had. But in the meantime, I think there's also on our side of it, Sam, like, it is fun, and it's relatively harmless. I mean, I guess, you know, if fan base gets really disappointed because you took a guy that the media hyped up or the media, you know, crapped on, that's probably going to suck. But if he goes out and is good for about 3 weeks in the regular season, I'd imagine it's no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I actually think mock drafts, I used to, like, really not like them because it's like, as a beat reporter, I want to report things that are accurate, that I, like, know. And so I can advance your understanding of the team. And mock drafts, like, always, like, you know, kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because it's like, how can I tell a fan, like, this is what I think they're going to do when I don't know that? And I think, like, I've learned, okay, like, I'm going to try to justify this pick and be like, hey, this is, you know, as long as you have the disclaimer of, like, I don't have inside information on this, this is what I'm thinking, this is the vision potentially, then that's, you know, that's the thing. I don't love the, like, grading drafts at the end of it, because it's like, that's like another layer of speculation that's really hard to tell.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I do think that mock drafts are like a fun exercise where it's kind of just like, you can't just talk about, oh, you know, like, I like this guy because of X, Y, and Z. Like, it really kind of, it really like makes the rubber meet the road in a way that it like challenges you to say, like, you can't like all of these guys the same amount, or you can't, like, not everyone is going to be available at this thing. Like, what, you know, have the courage of your convictions, as people like to say. So I do think the exercises, as long as they're treated with an appropriate level of seriousness, I think they're pretty fun. I've really come full circle on that.
Yeah, for sure. I think I have too. And it's seriousness, but also humility. And I say this all the time when we do our mocks on this show on Take Command. It's like, we're going to make a pick at the end. If you want to be smarter, listen to the discussion before the pick. Like, the printout afterwards of, like, what we did, that doesn't matter. The conversation of why we're considering this player, why we're not, why that guy's off our board, like, that is where the knowledge actually is and will make you or give you a larger and a deeper understanding of the team. So with that said, Sam, who do you like for the Commanders at 29?
I need the listeners to know that when Craig and I were talking about doing this segment, and Craig was like, yeah, at the end we can just have you give your pick. And I was like, wow, okay. I sort of feel like it wipes out the first 15 minutes, but
no because we had the last 2 minutes
kidding.
Where we said
just
we've
talked about it. Exactly.
Yeah, we've come full circle, so now we're here. Let's have some fun, shall we?
All right. So our mock draft, which we're publishing tomorrow, I struggled with this. I'm gonna build it up so that the readers, you know, or the not the readers, the listeners, I'll have to hang on here. I really think it's gonna come down to if they stay at the pick, which I think they might not do. I think they'd like to trade down, but to me, I think it's going to be hard to trade down or get a good deal to trade down, because there are a lot of trade down candidates in front of you, especially Minnesota at number 24, which they only have 4 picks. It's a league low. I think if you're a team that wants to go up and get a quarterback, if you love Milroe or Dart or any of those guys, like, I think you're going to be targeting them or other teams in front of them. So for the Commanders, I was like, okay, I think it's an edge rusher, a corner, or a receiver. I know, you know, a lot of the popular names. I almost went Ezeraku. I almost went Barron, the Texas corner. But instead, I landed on Ohio State receiver Emeka Ibuka. I think that he is a blue-chip prospect. I think that he fits in well with the current skill group, and I think he's a really good investment for the long term. If you look at the receiver room right now, the 8 guys, they only have 1 younger than 27, Luke McCaffrey at 24, and I just think, like, he's insurance if the Debo Samuel thing doesn't work out. I think that, like, Ibuka does all the right things. He blocks. He has the right mentality. He's a quote-unquote commander tag. I think there's a chance he falls. And so I think that it could be a situation where he's high on their board. He's, like, you know, maybe clearly the best or the second best guy. I think there's a chance that that happens. I'm not saying it does, but that was why I went with him as the pick.
If they wind up taking Ibuka, I will be very excited, because I think there's no way he's not a good football player. Covering him will be a delight. And he's going to wreck some defensive back's life this year as a blocker on a clip that I'm going to post on every social media platform I have and watch on loop endlessly, because that's who he is. Like, you're absolutely right. He is a perfect commander. My only question with him is he lack the athletic upside to have the kind of juice that I think is the thing that's missing from their offense? And this is kind of my struggle with them in general, is do you take a big swing? We talked about this a lot at edge. Like, if Ezeraku and Shamar Stewart are on the board, I think Ezeraku could be a very solid pass rusher who gets you 8 to 10 sacks for a lot of years in the NFL. Shamar Stewart might not ever get 5 sacks based off his college production. He might also figure out how to tackle and get 15 sacks for a couple of seasons because he's that athletically explosive. They don't make athletes like that. And that's kind of, I think, one of my fundamental questions going into tomorrow, Sam, to wrap us up here, is what kind of risk tolerance does Adam Peters have with where they are? Is he going to take a big swing on a super talented player? Or is he going, Emeka Egbuka is a double no matter what, and if we add a double, we're in really good shape? And I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm curious what thoughts you have on where they might be.
I don't either. That's one of the things that I'm looking out for. To me, if you stay at 29, which means you can't trade down, which means you're not going to add more picks in the top 100, which I think are clearly more valuable than, you know, trading down on day three for like a late round pick swap or a seventh next year or whatever. Like, if you have five picks, I think you want to, you know, AP has talked about, you know, a successful draft being coming out of it with three starters. If you have five picks, you want to get three starters. I think starting with a double is a great place to be. Like, you know, like Shamar, you know, yes, he is the upside swing, but are you likelier to do that in a year where you have seven picks or eight picks or nine picks like they had last year? I just think with your resource allocation right now, you've traded to get some top-line guys in Tunsil and Debo. Like, to me, their situation right now leans conservative. If AP is like, look, we did that so we could take swings in the draft, then yeah, I I'm not mad at that. I think that's a totally defensible strategy. But to me, it just seems like he would lean conservative now.
That totally tracks. The one thing I will say about Egbuka, though, I was looking at him again this morning and looking at some of the numbers. 1.50 flat 10-yard split. That is serious quickness. So while he doesn't have the top end like burner speed to just run by someone downfield, he will separate, which I think plays on tape as well for him. I guess we'll find out tomorrow. I can't believe it's here. It's tomorrow, Sam. So we don't have to speculate much longer. Great work on the piece, my friend. Have fun tomorrow night with all the goobers in the draft room. And I'm sure we'll talk to you here in the next couple weeks about whatever they wind up doing.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Always our pleasure. Sam Fortier with us here on The Hoffman Show. Commanders beat reporter for The Washington Post. He and Nikki Javala have that mock draft coming out tomorrow, and I cannot encourage you enough. If you just want a really fun read, to check out Sam's story in The Post today about the kind of history and legend of mock drafts and how they've evolved over the years. Just a really stupendously fun way to spend 10 minutes reading an article, unless you read faster, and then it's probably like 6 or 8. When we get back here on The Hoffman Show, I want to talk a little bit more about some of these guys because I do feel like there's a couple prospects that have been miscast. And when Logan and I went through an exercise this morning, we discussed a few of them in ways that I think are worth bringing up here on the radio show as well. So we continue to get prepared for the NFL draft next here on the Team 980. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Great chat with Sam Fortier. Coming up at 5 o'clock, our pal Dan Pizzuta joins us. We'll talk about some of the different prospects on our radar with him. Of course, Dan joined us all football season long. Was with the 33rd team. They stupidly dissolved their media division and decided to become a consulting company, which means you can just watch Dan's work on YouTube and anywhere else he puts it out, Blue Sky, etc. Anthony Haney, this morning, Logan and I decided to react to something that Adam Peters said yesterday, which we thought was pretty interesting. Adam was asked about how he puts together his big board. This is what the Commanders GM said yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's another really good question. There's guys that we know that aren't going to be there, so it wouldn't be. If they were there, yeah, we'd take them. But we're fairly certain they're not going to be there. But there is a group of, I don't know. This draft is interesting just because very little certainty after, you know, the first 10 picks or so of who's going to go where and why and what's going to happen and all that. So we have to be ready for a lot of different guys to fall to us or to not fall to us. And so we have done that where we've done an exercise where we just ranked, you know, this group of guys, however many it is. It could be 10, it could be 5, it could be 20 of, okay, will they be there? All right, and if these guys are there, should we stay and pick, or should we trade down? Should we trade up to go get one? So, really challenged ourselves to do that before we fell on the clock. That way, we'd be able to make a decision pretty quickly.
And so, the idea is that you have the arguments ahead of time, and we've talked about this a lot over the past, you know, really couple of years. Is you don't want to come to a situation where you get in the war room and you're scrambling to make a pick because you haven't had the situation. And so I decided that this was a good idea to play with Logan this morning, and I wanted to press him on a couple of guys. And I would say that there are two in particular that come to mind, Anthony, that I want to talk about because I think they've been misrepresented on some level of what their ceilings are, what their floors are. And then if you have any other guys that you want to ask me about, we can. I feel like I have a pretty good feel at this point, I would hope so a day before the draft, of who Washington might be taking at 29. Like, there's just not a lot of guys that would surprise me anymore. So the first guy is a guy that we might have spent more time on this show talking about than anybody else, and that is Shamar Stewart. Because he is one of the most polarizing prospects in this draft, not just among fans, but among draft analysts. Again, Dane Brugler's got him as, I think, a top 10 player in this draft. I know other draft analysts, like good ones, that have him in like the 50s that would not touch him. Like Fran Duffy does a lot of D-line work. He works up in Philly. And Duffy is like, I'm all the way out on Shamar Stewart. Wouldn't touch him in the first round. I think at this point he's leaning more towards getting out of the first round than being drafted in it. But there's it only takes one. You know, the Atlanta Falcons love him at 15. Welcome, you're an Atlanta Falcon. So the thing about Shamar Stewart that I think is misunderstood is that he didn't have any production in college. How many times have you heard that, Ant?
Rarely, but not often.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I always say Jamin because he played 1 year. But
yeah. Well, he played more than 1 year, but like this is a guy that never had more than a sack and a half in a season.
Yeah.
Right? So people like to say, no, he's no production. He didn't have no production. He had no sack production, which is an important thing for an edge to have, but is it also an important distinction? The guy that I kind of kept coming back to the more I thought about Stewart is someone that Logan and I had not talked about this comparison. And then Logan brought it up today. You got the wrong former commander. The guy you're looking for is Montez Sweat. Crazy athlete. Now, Stewart's twitchier. Montez better, like, if I need a defensive end to go make a tackle 30 yards downfield, I don't know there's another one in the league I take over Montez Sweat, because Montez ran a legitimate 4.39 40, I think it was. So his long speed's crazy. But for a defensive end, I'd rather have the 11-foot broad jump. I'd rather have the 1.58 10-yard split. And he did run a crazy good, or not a crazy good, but a very good 40. But he's twitchier. The thing with him is, it's basically just his missed tackle rate that's a question. But this is a guy that did not play like in a wide nine, super pass rush, pin your ears back and go situation. So one, his sack opportunities were lower. Two, he's a good run player. Like, he's very stout in the same way that Montez was, knows how to use his body. He has great length. He can keep blockers out here as opposed to getting all caught up in here, which allows you to shed and then use your athleticism to get there. The problem is with him, when he gets there, he had a 26.9% missed tackle rate, which is, you're missing one out of every four tackles. It's not good. It's not good. But this is kind of my question, is if I'm Dan Quinn and I talk and teach that stuff all the time, I talk about pursuit angles. I talk about how to tackle. We work on the fundamentals in our program. Can I find out enough about what didn't work for him at A&M with how he learned how to tackle, and hopefully, you know, in youth football, high school football, why did he not learn how to tackle, and can we teach him? Because if you can teach Shamar Stewart how to tackle, you might have an all-pro. He's 6'5", 270 pounds, and broad jump is 11 foot, verticals 40 inches. They don't make dudes like that. And so, but I think that gets turned into, he's going to bust out of the league because he can't play at all. And it's like, no. He's not just an athletic freak running around out there with no idea. He hustles. He plays really hard. He does stuff, basically everything really well. He led A&M in pressures with 39. 39 in 12 games is a good number. He does everything but finish. And if I can teach him how to finish, then we might have a stud. And that's the question. But I think the floor with Stewart is higher than people realize, and that should massively affect how people feel about him.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. You've made me feel a little bit better about Shamar Stewart. again, like the lack thereof sack production is all everyone, you know, wants to beat him down, like, over. But at the same token, I forgot, like, who we had on a couple of days ago, but they felt as though that they can trust, you know, this coaching staff to, you know, I think it was Mitch. They yeah. know what we have in this coaching staff, and they can coach that guy up, that talent up. So, again, like, you've made me a believer. Who was your other guy?
So, I will mention, honorable mention, Mitch mentioned this guy yesterday, too. His teammate, Stewart's teammate at Texas A&M, Nick Skorton, is a guy we should be talking about as a potential Commander's pick at 29. It's probably a little rich, but 2 years ago at Purdue, double-digit sack guy. Played more in that wide nine, like wider alignment. When I say wide nine, you line up outside of the tight end. When you're a tight five or a 4-eye, you're playing more right on the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle, or dead set between the guard and the tackle. So you are not in a premier pass rush position. You got to either have a ton to get around the corner or be able to bull that inside shoulder. And so it's just a much harder thing to get pressures, get sacks, etc. But Nick Skorton also just like plays his face off, runs to the football with reckless abandon, is a good athlete, even if he's not what Stewart is. So, and he's played in a different system where he did have sack production, multiple year captain. Like, Nick Skorton should get a shout out. The other guy is Igbuka. He's got a little more juice than I think he gets credit for, because we think of juice as like, can you run a go route? And I think you have to think of juice as more than that. And the difference between like Emeka Igbuka and Terry McLaurin is Terry ran in the 4.3s and like legitimately has pull away speed, as we saw on that screen pass in the NFC divisional round game against the Lions, right? Like Terry can run away from people. Igbuka can't run away in the long term from people because he's a 4.48 guy, but he has elite quickness. Like, this is a kid that ran a 1.50 10-yard split at the combine. Do we have a short shuttle? Yeah, 4.12 short shuttle. That is quick. I wish we had a three cone. I bet you his three cone drill would be sub-7. I ran that at the short shuttle at his pro day. The 40 and the 1.50 10-yard split number. That's also his pro day. Didn't run in the at the combine, just measured, but 38 inch vertical. Like, that is an explosive short area athlete. And for a guy that's almost 6'1", he's like 6'3" and has pretty good arm length, 31.5 inch arms. Like, I can work with that. I can work with that kind of athlete to be a bona fide, really good two that is dangerous in his route running. And if he catches the ball on these curls and slants and things that he's going to be, these comebacks, these digs, one, he's going to reliably get open. Two, he can make the first guy miss and pick up extra yards, even if he's not going to take it to the house. And then you add in the physicality of the blocking, his character, all that kind of stuff. And like, if this dude goes to the Chargers or the Rams, they're going to be so damn happy. And if he comes to the Commanders, it's not, he doesn't have the same upside as Matthew Golden, Tet McMillan, these deep downfield bombs away receivers. But you want a great, like, as good of a complimentary piece as you could reasonably ask for that probably has a little bit more juice than we realize, I think Igbuka is worth talking about.
Yeah, I remember when we did our mock draft 1.0 and you end up selecting him. I was a little down on him just because I felt as though we would probably only be able to line him up in the slot, but he has, you know, to the point you were making, a little bit more versatility than just being a slot guy. This guy, like, he's not, you know, taking the top off the defense, but, like, he has a good enough burst, and, like, he can create separation and things of that nature. So, like, it definitely would be appealing to, you know, add him to what we already have here. And I think Adam Peters even talked about it. Like, if there's a receiver, we're not going to say no to him kind of thing.
For sure.
But yeah,
I find it not impossible, but I definitely think there's a chance that if he's on the board, there's another guy that I'm going to want more. But if all the edges go, I would take Igbuka over the corners not named Will Johnson. Like, I just think that the difference between him and the next guy is probably bigger than the gap between the corners you can get at 61. And then we'll see if they can trade back. Speaking of trade back, we got a question on the phones that I'm going to get to next, and we can take any more of your calls at 301-230-0980. But first, a look at what's trending.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings.
Which for me would be pineapple and toenails. Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirecTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
Happy NFL draft is in like 27 hours today. It's the Hoffman Show. We're here on the Team 980. We're talking about the draft with you at 301-230-0980. And then we're talking about it with our pal Dan Pizzuta coming up here in just a few minutes as well. Let's get to you on the phones, though, at 301-230-0980. Pete's got a question for us. Pete, fire away. You're on the Hoffman Show.
All right. Instead of trying to draft a receiver at 29, if there is a good possibility to maybe, if the Commanders trade their first-round pick and try to talk to the Cincinnati Bengals to try to get Trey Hendrickson.
Well, if it's just a receiver, I think that is an interesting thing, right? Because you're saying the board has fallen where the other edges aren't available. And generally speaking, you know, that is going to matter, right? I don't think that the Bengals will do it straight up, one pick for one player. But if they did, that is so fascinating. I'm not going to lie, Pete. I saw your question on the call screener in the last segment, and I tried to give myself the break to think about it. And okay. I don't know that I'd do it. He's a pass rusher on the wrong side of 30 who wants $35 million a year. And I know they have a ton of money. My question would just be, are you better off saving some of that money for the future and using that draft pick? But I think, to be honest, Pete, I think I would do it. I think if you're telling me I'm basically using the 29th pick on Trey Hendrickson, I can sign him to what looks like a 3-year, $100 million deal, but really is like 2 for $70. So I've got some flexibility moving forward. I'm not locking myself in for super duper long term with a guy who is on the wrong side of 30, knowing that I made the NFC Championship game last year and he's been the NFL sack leader multiple times, or is like got the most sacks over the last 3 years, whatever the stat is. I think I'd probably do it, Pete. That's a great question. I don't think the Bengals will do it. So I don't think Adam Peters is going to have to wrestle with this. But I think if that was on the table and I was the GM, I would do it.
Okay. Do you think it's probably better if there's a good edge rusher available at 29 that they go after him?
That's also an interesting question because it depends on who the guy, like at that point, it depends on who the guy is and what you think he can be. Obviously, the younger, cheaper player is always better if you think you can get remotely close to the production in the next couple of years. And passing up a good young edge is hard. But if you just don't think any of the guys on the board are that good or that reliable, or you're more concerned with 2025 than I think they are in this draft, I could see that. It's a great question, Pete. Yeah. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. And I do think that we're going to see some drafts or some trades in the next couple of days. There's a lot of rumors starting to heat up. There's a lot of discussions being had. And we'll see, because, of course, every single team as of right now has their own first-round pick. Let's go to Marcus and Brandywine. Marcus, wrap up the hour for us here on the Hoffman Show. What you got on this draft? What question or what guy do you want to talk about?
Not necessarily a question. It's just like, I won't give like any takes on trades or who we're going to draft because, you know, it's just full of uncertainty. And I think you guys would agree that the uncertainty makes the draft more exciting. I mean, but I can see how it could also make people, you know, feel a little bit uncomfortable not really knowing who we're going to take. And I say that because maybe I've been ignorant to it, or maybe GMs just haven't been as transparent. But, you know, after listening to AP kind of, you know, explain the big board and explain the processes and the scenarios, it kind of calms you a bit and it kind of opens your eyes a little bit more. And it's just like, you know, we as fans can say we want this person or that person and feel like we should draft this person or that person. But there, just like he said, there are 1,000 scenarios that could play out. And to hear that, you know, that they do prep for those types of scenarios, I mean, it's just another – that's another reason why I love AP. I mean, this is really a praise AP call for me, because just hearing, I guess, how he's going to work through this, you know, just gives me comfort in the draft, because I have no idea who we're going to take. And it's so many options that we possibly could take. And, you know, that gets frustrating. But, like, knowing that he has a plan in case this guy or that guy isn't there, it's kind of common. And I appreciate it. I mean, that's really all I wanted to touch on. Just kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of his way of thinking, you know. No, it was refreshing to hear
for sure. And I think the great ones prepare like this. Like, we hear the great ones prepare as athletes. Marcus, thanks as always for the call. Like, the great ones prepare, period. That could be the great scientists, the great salespeople, the great athletes, the great coaches, the great GMs, the great whatever of any of the great plumbers. Like, they, you want to walk into, there's probably a great joke somewhere in here. I'm just not a comedian. The point being that this is as unpredictable of a draft as Adam Peters might have to deal with in his entire career. You're picking at the end of a 20-player run where you have no idea who those 20 players are going to be. And, you know, the Athletic Football Show has been doing this ongoing kind of rolling mock draft. They're calling it their on-the-clock series, and they do like 6-7 picks at a time, and they've had different guys come on and pick, and Robert throws them, Robert Mays, the host, throws them like 4 different scenarios. And, man, the scenario they wind up with the Commanders was like Omarion Hampton, either Shamar Stewart or James Pierce, Derek Harmon, I think out of Oregon, might have been on there, like a defensive tackle that a lot of people have higher on their board, and one of the receivers or something like that. I don't remember the four choices, but like I literally would have been happy with any of them. Hilariously, our guy Mike Renner wound up taking James Pierce, which I think is the least likely scenario, because I just don't think Pierce is going to get that commander tag and thus be their pick. But if you can, I will tell you this. I'll say this about James Pierce. If they take him, I will trust that they have done the work and they think they can get the best out of him. I would be like, sweet, we're going to see if this kid does is the bad kid that everyone made him out to be, or whether he's got something in there, because Dan Quinn will get it out of him. Now, do I think that's enough for them to take that risk? Probably not, but I would be excited for it. So it's going to be fun. We're going to have a blast tomorrow with it. We're going to, again, three wide on the mock draft tomorrow. Me, Anthony, Linnell in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll have some guests. We'll let you hear some more Logan's thoughts throughout the show. And we're going an extra hour. We're 4 to 8 tomorrow. Of course, just 4 to 6:15 today, as we got Nats Orioles coming up at 6:15. So in the next hour of the show, Dan Pizzuta talking draft. And then our guy Steve Wino is going to join us at 5:30. We might get a draft thought from him, but we're going to mainly have him stick on his hockey helmet, as he is the AP's national hockey writer. And we're going to preview game two of the Caps and Habs tonight at Capital One Arena. But we're back with Pizzuta next here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Again, it's a monster sports day. It's a monster sports week here in the district. Of course, NFL draft tomorrow, which is where we go in 5 seconds. Just reminding you that Steve Wino will join us to preview the Caps playoff game tonight at 5:30. But right now, it is time.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
I am fairly confident that the first time I heard our next guest talk football was NFL draft season last year. We got to talk football with him all season long here on the show. He is an NFL analyst. It is our guy, Dan Pizzuta. Dan, what's up, my friend? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm excited to talk to you. Draft season, it both goes on forever, but this year for us, Dan, because the Commanders went as far as they did in the playoff, it also feels very short. I truly cannot believe the draft is tomorrow. Are you in that boat, or are you more of like the, oh my God, I can't believe it's taken this long to get here type of vibe?
Yes, I'm always in both camps, because I usually typically go very long into free agency also. So my, you know, February into March is very free agent, focus. I get to the combine and I'm usually learning who these guys are while I'm there. And I really don't start getting into the draft until after March. So it does still seem like it is a very long process here. But in terms of actually having dug into, these guys and being full in the draft process, I get into that very late also.
So for someone who has, I think, a really excellent, like for me, your superpower as someone who studies this is like you have a really intense understanding of many of these teams' schemes in a way that a lot of people who are doing the mock drafts just don't, because they like they have an idea, but they're watching the college guys all year or whatever. As you've gone through and then started watching the college guys, before we get to anything commander specific, unless this is the answer to your question, is there a guy you absolutely love as a fit with a particular team where you watch them and you go, that guy's an insert team here player?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let me think. I
can throw a couple at you that I've heard, and get your feedback if we want to do it that way. Cause I did just absolutely 1000% put you on the spot. And if I texted you that an hour ago, you would have had five guys ready. So I'll throw a couple at you. Cowboys, sure. And Tet McMillan.
Okay, so I was going to go with Matthew Golden for Dallas, but
okay.
either one of those receivers I think fits really well, specifically with what Dallas needs. I think both of those guys, you know, are probably, you know, McMillan, I think can handle being, you know, that type of outside X receiver. And I think he is going to be, you know, the first non, you know, Travis Hunter receiver taken, if you want to, you know, depending on how you want to classify Hunter, because he is really the one guy in this class who is that big outside guy who's going going to play there. GoldenEye, I think, is going to be a guy who can move around a little bit. I like either one of those guys in Dallas because they can fit so well with what CeeDee Lamb does as that slot guy more often, but a guy who can get so many targets and pull so much attention in the slot. And having either Golden, who can move around a little more, or McMillan on the outside, be able to complement them. And they just need some kind of juice, getting some verticality in that offense. So either Golden or McMillan is a fit I really like in Dallas, and I could see them going wide receiver regardless of which one of them is on the board there.
Yeah, I definitely could as well. I kind of hope they go McMillan because then I'm like, I don't know, there's a world where Golden falls to 29 and that would be sweet. Although he's receiver may not be Washington's top thing, but I like his fit here better. Since we went receiver, I'll give you another one. How about Emeka Egbuka and either of the Los Angeles teams?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense too. I could, you know, Pittsburgh is probably not a team that's going to go wide receiver, but I could see him there too. He's a guy that is just going to be, you know, one of those kind of power slot kind of guys, but like you said, going to fit in one of those Los Angeles teams specifically because he does, play the slot, is that kind of smooth route runner, plays faster than kind of you would expect from how he plays, is a very solid and willing blocker. So he's going to bring kind of that power there. So, you know, yeah, putting him in kind of a McVay offense and with Devontae Adams, Puka Nacua, that would be a very fun 11 personnel team.
I would be so mad if the Rams got him. Like, oh, you get rid of Cooper Kupp and you get this guy? Cool. That's fair. That's sure. Fine. Do it, Sean. Just make everybody else mad. I got one more for you, and then I want to kind of do an inverse question or inverse version of that question. What about Tyler Booker and the Cincinnati Bengals? I heard that one today, and I was like, everyone and their mother thinks the Bengals can or are going to and should go defense because reasons. But Tyler Booker is a really interesting guard prospect. And a team like Cincinnati, I do wonder if they're just like, hey, if we can protect Joe Burrow, like, we'll figure out everything else. And Tyler Booker, I'm curious what you think of that fit.
Yeah, he is super interesting because he is a guy that kind of is going to play into more of the kind of the gap scheme type of running just because of the bigger body that he is. He's not so much that guy that you're going to want to be doing laterally. And I think he's going to be good in some of that pass protection, some of the quick game that Cincinnati wants to play. So I think he would be a good fit there if that is something where they think they need to continue to shore up that offensive line. I think he does as that bigger body fits with, you know, those bigger tackles that they have too. I think that would be something that works, but like you said, I would expect them to go defense. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is like they put almost all of their picks into defense just because they need to throw as many resources to that as they can, because I think they can kind of, at least in the interior, kind of cover up the interior of the offensive line with how they play, how quickly Burrow typically gets the ball out. But if they do want to go in the interior there, I think Booker is the type of guy who does make sense with what they're doing schematically.
So real quick before I ask my inverse question, was there anybody else that popped to mind of like really great scheme fit in the first round for one of these teams?
I think those are kind of what are hitting. I mean, I would love to see, you know, like I think Tyler Warren in Chicago would be a lot of fun. I know they do have Cole Kmet, but I think Warren is definitely more of a guy you can move around a little bit, and just kind of the way he is able to. I've seen a lot of people start to say that how Penn State designs plays specifically for Warren, that's starting to become like a negative in his scouting report. Because you're not really seeing that many schemed type of plays for a tight end in the NFL. But I think Penn State was doing that because they had absolutely no one else to throw to. So if they weren't scheming plays for Tyler Warren, they weren't going to be scheming plays for anyone else. So I don't think he needed those schemed plays to be getting open. And I think the way that they can move him around, kind of have him be like a in a San Francisco sense, and this would kind of be my like fit that would answer that question also, like Tyler Warren in San Francisco playing like a mix of George Kittle and Kyle Juszczyk, as a guy who can be a tight end, but move into the backfield, be kind of an H-back type thing. You know, he would never get to 11. I don't think San Francisco would do that. That wouldn't be their pick, because I think they have so many other holes. But having him be that kind of movable piece in an offense, I think would be really fun. I think Chicago would get a lot of use out of him in that way.
Interesting. Dan Pizzuta with us here on the Hoffman Show. So then there's the inverse version of this question is basically, what do you do with Malachi Starks? Because my guy, Logan Paulson's got him as like a top 10, I think, player in this draft. But there's the classic, like, he's a safety. He might be a nickel. He might be free. He might be strong. Like, what do you do with him? How high do you have Malachi Starks? And then what team do you... Like, if you're a division rival of a team that you don't want to see him go to, who's that team? Where, you know, for example, when Kyle Hamilton went to Baltimore, very similarly, everyone else that had to play Baltimore was just like, of course, that guy went to Baltimore. That sucks for us. Who's that team for Malachi Starks?
I mean, it's going to be super interesting, especially for the safeties, because I don't know how high the NFL really is on the position. We kind of see that every year, both in the draft, like Kyle Hamilton never should have fallen as far as he did. And I think, you know, some of that was from the workouts. But again, he was just like a great football player. And we've seen that translates. He is, again, a great football player in the NFL. I think it is going to be similar for Starks. But, you know, once we were in the early parts of draft season, it seemed like he could potentially be going early. But maybe now it's, you know, the back of the 20s. And I think, you know, if he slides to Buffalo back, like, I think they need a safety and have the guy who kind of has real good range. And that way, I think that could completely transform what Buffalo does in the back end, because they don't really have that really rangy guy in the back end, or even someone who just has that speed and athleticism and versatility to be moving there. So if he is slides back to Buffalo, I think that really makes that defense very interesting and kind of compounds what they've been trying to build up in the front four. And safety is definitely, I think, a position of need for the Bills too.
So when we talk about the Commanders, edge is the position that comes up the most. First and foremost, how would you rank the Commanders' needs slash wants? Like, if you're in Adam Peters' chair, what are the positions that you're hoping you have the pick of the litter from at 29?
Yeah, I think edge is going to be the top one. Just because there are going to be, it's a decent edge class, but especially in the first round, I think you're kind of just hoping one of those middle of the first type of guys kind of gets to the back of the 20s for them. Because I think it does drop off a little bit in terms of, you know, the next tier of edge rushers that would be going, you know, in the second round. I think what Washington should kind of be wanting is one of those guys who's a little more athletic. And I know there are a wide range of those guys. I think there are some athletic guys like a Shamar Stewart, who's this super athlete, doesn't really know what he's doing as a pass rusher. I think there are some guys that are kind of in between a little bit. But then once you get to kind of, you know, the second tier, or the guys who are going to be, you know, potentially going in the second round, if there's a very early run on edge rushers, you're getting into kind of like the Jack Sawyers, guys who are good, but are going to be winning kind of more with their pass rush moves and their instincts, which is going to be great. But Washington kind of already has those guys, where you already have a Dorrance Armstrong, you already have a Deshaun Wise who came over in free agency. So you kind of already have that archetype of pass rusher. So if you can get one of these kind of, you know, explosive guys, I think that is potentially what the best case scenario for Washington in the first round.
So where do you come down on what we've basically turned into the Donovan Ezeraku versus Shamar Stewart argument? The polished, we have the production, but we understand the limitations athletically, versus this dude is the most ridiculous ball of clay that we have to mold that we could possibly think of, but the production isn't there. So if those two players somehow are both on the board at 29, and you're my D-line coach, Dan Pizzuta, and I'm GM Adam Peters, and I look at you and I go, on you, bud, which one do you want? Which direction do you go between Ezeraku and Stewart?
Ooh, yeah, it's tough. I think those two specifically, I think I would go with Ezeraki because I really like what he was able to bring to the table. I think he does have a little bit of that, you know, explosiveness and the production that it was definitely there that translates. You know, Stewart's tough just because I know he was asked to do some strange things in college that he's probably not going to be asked to do quite as often in the NFL, you know, playing in, you know, kind of a four-eye alignment and, you know, kind of playing to the run first more so than he ever would as an NFL pass rusher. But just the inability to really close and finish some of his pass rushes is concerning to me. I think, you know, hopefully if there's a guy who kind of, you know, splits the difference a little bit, like if a James Pierce ends up, I think he is probably the middle part of those two guys, a guy who is definitely more athletic than an Ezeraki would be, but definitely has more pass rush moves and more pass rush production than Shamar Stewart would be. So, I was going through a couple of, you know, mock draft simulators trying to, you know, see what the answer to this question was kind of last night while I was thinking about this. And Pierce did fall a couple of times. So I think if he's there, I think he could be, you know, the perfect type of guy, that guy who does have that athleticism and I think is going to be, you know, that different piece, you know, opposite a Wise and an Armstrong that kind of varies the type of guys you have on the edge.
So I feel like I'm obliged to say this because the audience has heard us talk about Pierce quite a bit, but I don't think he's going to be on their board because of the off-field and the competitive stuff, right?
Sure.
He's just – that's not who Dan Quinn is and who they want to be. He's not going to have the commander tag. But I'm curious, as a guy who comes at this through a very tape lens, like how much does that stuff jump off the tape for you? And like where does that stuff go in your notes? Because some teams value it a lot, and I do think Washington is one of those teams. Some teams will look at a guy like James Pierce and be like, watch the highlight tape. We'll figure out how to get the highlight tape as often as possible. So how is you rank players in your own way that you're doing this as someone who's kind of doing it for 32 teams? How do you think about how competitive a guy is, for instance, especially if it's something that you can see on tape?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on kind of what it is, right? Because if James Pierce is not that competitive, he still ended up with the highest pressure rate of all edge rushers in this class last year. So if it kind of just kind of depends. And I think that's, you know, the tough thing where I can come in and say, this guy looks very good at what he does. You know, I'm not going to be someone who is giving, you know, grand proclamations about what I think his character is because I have absolutely no idea. So that's going to really be, you know, up for the teams when they're talking to these guys. When it translates to, you know, translates to the tape and you can kind of see either, you know, taking some plays off, but sometimes there's even reason for that. But when you watch Pierce, it's still explosive. He's still getting to the quarterback. So if other things check out, I don't think that's something that really, you know, would give me an issue with what he's doing on the field.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think it's so, like, we just don't know. And that is a thing that we don't say often in the media that we don't admit, but I am trying to say it as often as possible during draft season because we hear all this stuff. And then a team will take a guy, and Adam Peters talked about his press conference yesterday. He's like, there was a guy that had all these character issues, supposedly, that we took in San Francisco. I wanted to know who it was. I wish someone had followed up and be like, can you tell us who the guy is, since he turned out to be a great guy? But he was like, he's the best teammate. He's the best competitor. Like, dude's been awesome. And so I don't know if it was like Fred Warner or someone, but like that's what the type of player that it sounded like. And so I guess we'll find out tomorrow night if James Pierce falls out of tomorrow night into Friday. Last thing for you real quick. I know you spent a ton of time studying Jacksonville, or I should say Liam Cohen's offense last year. He's now the head coach in Jacksonville. They've been getting mocked Mason Graham forever until this week when all of a sudden you're seeing Tet McMillan, Ashton Jeanty being mocked there. Knowing what you know about Cohen's offense, do you think that the Jacksonville Jaguars at 5 become an unexpected pivot point for this draft?
I think they are going to be regardless because, like you said, it was very chalky Mason Graham because I just don't think many people were, you know, it was just kind of an easy thing to click off in a mock draft. And I don't think there was a lot of like real thought going into it for that much. So I could definitely see them going with an offensive skill player, because they definitely still need that. I mean, if I were in their position, I would lean McMillan, because I think that does create a really interesting receiving core with, with Brian Thomas Jr., where you can have McMillan on the outside. He's that type of outside receiver that I think Trevor Lawrence would have, some trust in. I don't see the Jenty thing at five, especially with their offensive line. I think, I'm hoping Liam Cohen is coming from an offense where he realizes that Tampa Bay offensive line was a very good run blocking unit, which is why a guy like Bucky Irvin, who actually was one of the best running backs when he was like hit at or behind the line of scrimmage, still made some things happen. But they were so good at the design of some of the rushing things that were a lot built off what that offensive line does. So I would be very surprised if they go straight into let's throw a running back in here and try to supercharge the offense that way. But I would not be surprised if they do choose to go a wide receiver, especially a guy who can be that big X like McMillan.
Dan Pizzuta, Dan, where can folks find more of your breakdowns?
We're just heading out all social medias right now. More Blue Sky, but pretty much Dan Pizzuta anywhere you want to look.
All right, so we got X, you got doing some stuff on YouTube, especially on YouTube Shorts, so make sure you're following Dan there. Dan, always appreciate it, sir. Thank you, and happy draft day.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Have a good time.
That's Dan Pizzuta with us here on The Hoffman Show. It is draft day tomorrow. It is Capitals, Canadiens, game today. Tonight, Capital One Arena, you will see the Habs and the Caps get things going. Can the Capitals hold home ice with a win? Can it be less stressful than Monday's Game 1 overtime victory? These are the questions we have for AP National hockey writer Steve Wino, who joins us next here on the Team 980.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sam. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Capitals Canadiens game two tonight at Capital One Arena. Number one seed Capitals. Can they make it a little less stressful than it was on Monday night? Well, love an overtime win, but man, nobody loves overtime if they got feelings involved. Steve Wino was there. Of course, he has no feelings about any of this. He's just a journalist, neutral as could be. He's the AP's national hockey writer. Wino joins us now. Wino, how are we feeling, man?
Hello, down here.
I'm doing great, Craig. How are you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate your time on a busy day. What did we learn? Let's just start there. Game one's, Capitals dominant, really good, somewhere between there for 50 minutes, not so good for 10, and then they needed less than 3 minutes for Ovechkin to put the puck in the back of the net in overtime. What did we learn from game one?
Yeah, Craig, I think we learned that the Capitals were able to flip that switch from sort of not playing, getting Alex Ovechkin the record a couple weeks ago, and sort of not playing meaningful hockey for several months. They were able to sort of get back to the game and the style of play that they had for most of the regular season that made them successful and got them the top seed in the Eastern Conference. And we weren't sure if we were going to see that. And I think that was a good sign. And also we learned that Logan Thompson, he did struggle a bit, and the Canadiens didn't kind of make his life as difficult as they would have liked. But he shook the rust off, and we saw what the Capitals sort of what their identity wants to be, what they want to be as a team. And then we saw a little bit of a concerning sign from a Capitals standpoint of the Canadiens pushing in the second half of the third period. One penalty happens, Pierre Dubois gets called for tripping, power play goal, and everything sort of falls apart. And I think the Capitals' lesson for themselves probably in there is you can't let your foot off the gas. You can't just cut a coast to the finish because the Canadiens are not a pushover.
How confident are you in this Capitals team that they actually learned that lesson?
Very confident, just because I think Spencer Carberry has been so good at pushing the right buttons for this team from the moment he took over, and he's been really good. I've said this a lot, that he adjusted when he took over the job. He said we're going to be a fast team and play with pace, and realized he had a slow old roster and sort of adjusted on the fly and kind of knew what to do and how to communicate those changes. And I think the message between games and from Carberry and the coaching staff is that you can't, there's no wiggle room to play like that. This is not yes, the Canadiens are an 8 seed, but they've played so hot and they're sort of a young team with nothing to lose. And that's a scary sort of opponent to have in a spot like this. And they don't look like the Capitals last year, where they ran out of gas from expending so much energy to get into the playoffs. Maybe if this is a 4 or 5 game series, we find out that they were like that, but this is a young, hungry opponent that the Capitals, I think, also should realize that they cannot take lightly just because they're a 1 seed and Montreal's the 8.
Steve Wino, national hockey writer at the Associated Press, with us here on the Hoffman Show. When you look at Logan Thompson's performance, like, he had some spectacular saves in that game, but you got to play 60 minutes and it's game one back for him after the injury. The mistakes that he made, are those rust mistakes or are those cause for concern? Like, where are we at on his game one performance? And really more so, Steve, and how we feel about him going into game two?
Well, I'm going to say rust for now, and we're going to find out more in a little bit tonight whether it's a cause for concern, because even Logan Thompson before the injury, his play from February on, since the Four Nations break, was not as good as it was up to the end of January when he got that contract extension. His play certainly had dropped off at some point in that period of time. But if he's able to sort of, if it's a rust thing, and he's able to sort of get back to the way that he was playing before the Four Nations break, that this is a Capitals team that there's a strength and an advantage in goal with Logan Thompson over the Canadiens and Samuel Montembeau, who arguably was Montreal's best player in game one.
We have seen teams in the past alternate goaltenders in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It is obviously not ideal, but if Thompson is going to play at the level that he played at post Four Nations, then is he still their best option at that level, or is going back to Charlie Lindgren, who helped them, you know, get into the playoffs and secure that one seed, albeit not certainly as playing as well as Thompson did pre Four Nations break, which of those two are better options if those are their levels?
I think it's Logan Thompson, because Charlie Lindgren, and I think he would admit this, did not play his best down the stretch, did not have a great season by his standard, and wasn't as good as he was last year when he carried the Capitals into the playoffs to get in game 82, and then lose to the Rangers. But this has not been Charlie Lindgren's best season. I do wonder how long the leash is on Logan Thompson if the Canadians are able to pump a few goals by him. They sort of let him off the hook a little bit in game one, partially because the Capitals had the puck more and the Canadians were defending so much that basically, Mike Mathis said this yesterday, they were defending so much that they had to go change and they couldn't really spend a whole lot of time in the offensive zone. If Martin St. Louis, a Hall of Fame player and now turning out to be a pretty good coach, figures out sort of the adjustment there to get the Canadians the puck more in the offensive zone, they're going to test Logan Thompson a lot more. And I don't think this is a sort of game three decision, but I wonder really, because the Capitals have played both goaltenders all year long and really and alternated them really for the first half of the season, I do wonder how long the leash is.
We had your colleague from ESPN, Greg Wyshynski, on the show on Monday, and I said, is there any chance the Capitals can perform well in this postseason if Alex Ovechkin is basically not a monster in terms of the goal-scoring tear that he's been on? You know, they got him the record and on through, and Greg was just like, no, like he's got to be their offense, the most critical piece. Be damned that he's 20 years into this. Game one, that's fine. I think, have learned not to doubt Alex Ovechkin. One, I would say, how likely is it that he can keep up not two goals per game pace, but some kind of really high pace at this stage of his career? And two, if he needs some support, where does that support need to come from?
Well, I don't know if he can keep up that sort of scoring pace, but the Capitals have shown that if they are able to control the puck and draw penalties, that he is still dangerous in a power play from the Ovi Zoy, from that spot in the left faceoff circle, to where he certainly was a motivated player coming off breaking the record, not having a point in the series against the Rangers last year. But the thing that Alex Ovechkin can do and did in game one is lead physically and throw in the body, and it was the entire team. I mean, they had a million hits. 14 of the 18 skaters had at least one hit in that game. And Ovechkin was the guy sort of setting the tone on finishing checks and sort of taking the toll on the Canadiens defensemen, specifically the young defenseman, Lane Hudson, who's probably going to be rookie of the year, of sort of doing that. But from an offensive standpoint, it's the same sort of secondary scoring the Capitals have gotten all season. Tom Wilson was a 30-goal scorer. Dylan Strome set a career high in goals, assists, and points. Pierre-Luc Dubois, also a career high in points. Connor McMichael is probably somebody who can step up. But I'll give you another one, Craig, and he's new to this team, but Ryan Leonard looked really good the other night and looked real close to breaking through and scoring his first NHL goal against a goaltender. He had the empty netter the same night Alex Ovechkin tied Wayne Gretzky's record. But Leonard looks like a guy who's ready to break through and score. And if he sort of finds his comfort level and is able to get out of that drought, he's a guy who could really help the Capitals in the series and potentially beyond.
By any chance, have you looked up who the last player was or how rare it is for a guy to get his first NHL career goal in the playoffs? It's going to happen more in this sport than any other based off how the calendar works. Do you happen to know that stat, or even better, like the Leonard stat of first non-empty netter in the playoffs?
Well, it actually happens fairly often. Tom Wilson made his NHL debut for the Capitals in the playoffs in 2013. I don't even remember if he scored in that series, but Kel McCarr of Colorado, who was the playoff MVP when the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup in 2022, was also a similar sort of thing. It happens so often with that guys get plugged in right into the lineup. The Montreal Canadiens have a guy, Ivan Demidov, who made his debut late in the regular season, similar to Leonard. It's happening actually a lot around the league right now, that good teams that are in the playoffs, plugging in these young players. And so it does happen a lot more than any other sport.
Yeah, it's kind of wild, just with the timing of the draft and how it all goes down. Last but not least, Wino, there are guys entering the lineup. There are also guys exiting the lineup. Where are we at on the injury front going into tonight for both of these teams?
Well, the Capitals announced yesterday that Barton Ferravari is out for the remainder of the playoffs after having surgery to repair that torn meniscus in his right knee. Alexi Protas skated again by himself this morning, did not took part in the Capitals' morning skate, did not take part in an optional practice yesterday. It feels like he's a little bit away, but it doesn't feel like he's terribly far away. If I had to guess right now, I would say he's probably in the lineup, maybe in game four, Montreal. Maybe if they're the Capitals are up in this series, you wait until game five because you have the extra day off between four and five next week. I could see Alexi Protas, which is actually a week from tonight, potentially making his return as soon as then. It's a skate cut to the top of his left foot, so it's a lot of it's got to be pain tolerance and also a little bit of conditioning since he hasn't played for a couple of weeks. The Capitals want to make sure he's good to go skating-wise, being able to push off on that foot and also be able to play the 18, 19, 20 minutes a game he did during the regular season.
And how big of losses do you think those are right now for Washington in this series and maybe even more so depending on how tonight goes beyond?
It's a big one. And Ferravari certainly is the guy who played more penalty-killing time this season than anybody else. And so now everybody has to slide into that spot. Alexander Alexeyev, who took a stick to the mouth the other night and is going to be wearing a full fishbowl cage or visor over his face tonight, has to sort of fill in those minutes. And it's almost minutes by committee for Ferravari. And Protas is a huge one. Not that he's such a big imposing player. Not that he's a big hitting guy, but against a smaller kind of skilled Canadiens team without a whole lot of experience, Alexi Protas in front of the net, what he's been able to do 5-on-5 scoring-wise, I think you take it as, yes, it's a big loss, but I think the Capitals have to look at it as glass half full, that they can get through this series and get through Montreal without Alexi Protas for some of it or all of it, that they have a huge reinforcement coming in Protas, coming off a career year, a guy who signed long-term at an insanely bargain basement price, who looks exactly like the kind of player who can make a difference in the playoffs.
Steve Wino, national hockey writer for the Associated Press. He's at Capital One Arena where, about an hour and 20 minutes from now, they'll get things going between the Capitals and the Canadiens. Steve, always appreciate it. Why am I calling you Steven twice this interview? Wino, thank you. It felt weird both times. Wino, thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Enjoy the game tonight.
I will do my best. That's Steve Wino with us, a.k.a. Anthony Wino. I've never called that man by his first name once in the decade that we've known each other.
I'm not gonna. I felt weird calling him Steven. Even when I texted him, I said, "This doesn't feel right."
It's "Hey, dude," or "Hey, Wino" in a text,
yeah.
And it's he's either Steve Wino, Steven Wino, or just Wino. Never Steve or never Steven.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to everybody, and especially Wino. When we get back, we'll talk some hoops here on the Team 980. First, a look at what's trending. We're rolling near the end of the Hoffman Show here on a Wednesday because the Washington Nationals are hosting the Baltimore Orioles tonight, and you can hear it right here. Nats on Deck coming up at 6:15 and then at 6:45, first pitch with Charlie and Dave. Of course, the Capitals in action tonight as well. 7 o'clock, the puck drops, and then tomorrow night, Anthony, we are off early today. We are on late tomorrow. We are on until 8 p.m. because tomorrow is the NFL draft.
Let's go.
I'm excited. The intrigue. Who are they going to take? And then everyone's, of course, rooting for the same people that sponsor our weekend preview segment, which is nobody. Everyone wants a trade back. How many quarterbacks is it going to take in the first round for the Commanders to get a trade back? I think it's going to... Actually, we'll talk hoops in 10 minutes. But I think this is an interesting point. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, The Athletic Football Show, which I do listen to it a lot, and I talk about it a lot because they're very smart and they make good points. But they had a mailbag question about the fifth-year option, Anthony. And I think it's worth reiterating a point that Robert Mays made that I had forgotten about, specific to why the fifth-year option talk is a little bit overrated for basically everyone but quarterbacks. And even then, I don't even know how viable it is. So the fifth-year option used to be pretty cheap. It's not as cheap as the current or as the first 4 years of the rookie deal, but in the new CBA that started in like 2018, I think, somewhere in there, they changed the fifth-year option. And now, if a player's really good, like makes a Pro Bowl good,
Sauce Gardner,
that fifth-year option is like the franchise tag. I think if it's two Pro Bowls, it's the franchise tag. If it's one Pro Bowl, it's the transition tag. The franchise tag, if you need a reminder, is a fully guaranteed one-year deal worth the average of the top five players at that position. That's an expensive fifth-year option. Like, the Texans aren't going to sign C.J. Stroud to the fifth-year option, and the Commanders are not going to pick up Jaden Daniels' fifth-year option. Why? Because they're just going to sign him to an extension. Because if you can sign him to an extension after year three, imagine how much higher the market is 2 years later. You want to lock in that extension before the market jumps, and then hopefully by the end of that, you wind up with something resembling a team-friendly deal for the last couple of years, and you probably have to sign him to another extension. You know, they might do Patrick Mahomes' 10-year bit. Like, C.J. Stroud in Houston will probably get a 5-year deal. Like, we'll see. And it depends on, obviously, how the next year goes for both of them. But, like, the point is, if a player's actually that good, you're probably, the smart teams anyway, are not worried about a fifth-year option. They are merely going to sign that player to an extension. And thus, trading back into the first round to make the first 4 years of the contract more expensive and have the option for a fifth year is kind of pointless. Like, sure, if you truly need 5 years to figure a guy out, you could pick up the fifth year option and play it out and then be like, oh, okay, cool. You rocked in your fifth year. We'll sign you to an extension. But if you didn't know after year three or year four, you're probably not going to want to sign that guy. Like, guys that get their fifth-year option picked up and they go that route is like, didn't Daniel Jones get his fifth-year option picked up by the Giants? And then they signed him to a deal and then they regretted it instantly? So I just think the fifth-year option talk is not nothing. Right, there's a chance that if for a quarterback, it makes a little more sense and maybe it happens. But, there's been some more talk about, oh, could a tackle fall and a team wants to get the fifth-year option? No, they don't want a fifth-year option on a tackle. If he's good, they want to sign him to an extension. And if he's not, then they don't want to pay him a fifth-year option's worth of money. And so I would tell Commanders fans, unfortunately, even though it would be the prudent thing to do very likely at 29 for Washington, I don't know that there's going to be a partner to trade back. I would not get your hopes up for that scenario. If it happens, great. But I would not get your hopes up for that scenario.
Yeah, and I think even going off that, when Sam Fortier was on with us earlier today, and he was saying, you know, there's a few trade partners ahead of us. You got the Vikings. You also have, who's the other team? I think the Texans, maybe?
The Rams have been a popular team.
Rams.
But the Vikings are the big one because they have four draft picks.
Yeah, so, like, even then, like, we're probably going to miss out on, you know, a team wanting to, you know, move up because they can, you know, essentially move up further than, you know, 29 kind of thing. So it would suck, but I'm not going to lie, Craig, you enlightened me today as far as like the fifth year option stuff goes. Cause I didn't know all that it entails. So
here's the list of 2022 first round draft picks that can have their fifth year option picked up this year. Trayvon Walker's was picked up. They don't want to give him a huge pass rusher extension. That one's fine with me. Like, go. He's been 12th in the NFL in sacks since 2023. Go do it again. We'll pay you. Aiden Hutchinson's got the injury. Derek Stingley, he's awesome. So what did the Texans do? Signed him to an extension. They signed a 3-year, $90 million extension. And they also picked up his fifth-year option. So it kind of becomes a 4-year extension. The Jets are picking up Sauce Gardner's. They've got a new staff in place. I would imagine they want to get a deal done. Kayvon Thibodeau's not getting picked up. Aquanu, no. Neal, no. Drake London, that's an interesting one. But I think if I'm the Falcons, I would rather get an extension done at, you know, 80% of the top of the market, considering the top of the market is now Jamar Chase's $40 million. Can I get Drake London to sign a $30 million deal? Or do I have to pick up his fifth-year option and then play chicken next year? Garrett Wilson, Jets picked it up. Chris Olave actually got picked up, which is kind of crazy to me considering his injury situation. But no one else, I mean, there's great players in here. Jameson Williams, Kyle Hamilton. Is there anybody else that's worth mentioning? Probably not.
Jets, Hamilton's hasn't been picked up yet?
No, because they're going to work on an extension. My guess is after the draft and then like the first day that training camp opens, four guys I just mentioned have new deals. Because that's how it works.
You said Jameson Williams?
Yeah.
He's a first rounder?
Yeah. He was like 18th overall or something like that?
I didn't think he was the first. Because remember, he was coming off the injury.
Yeah, but he was would have been wide receiver one probably in that class. And people were just fine taking him. When he went to the Lions, everyone went, oh, no. He was the 12th pick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dope. Yeah. He looked like a first rounder.
Yeah, it's worked out quite nicely for them.
Yes.
All right, when we get back, busy night ahead in the NBA. Anthony's also relieved because his Lakers figured out a way to get it done last night. Maybe he's not relieved because he was kind of frustrated with how that game ended. We'll talk about it and wrap things up here on the Team 980. It is the Hoffman Show. That is us. It is we here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Tomorrow night, don't forget, we're going until 8 o'clock, leading you into our coverage of the first round of the 2025 NFL Draft. That'll be anchored by Linnell Willingham and Toby Altizer. Linnell will join us off the top of the show tomorrow to do a three-person mock draft of the entire first round. So that's how we'll open the show tomorrow. And then, of course, we'll see what happens as the day goes on. You'll also hear from Logan Paulson tomorrow during the show. So excited for that. As for right now, Anthony, though, we're going to wrap up. Before we give way to Charlie and Dave, as the Nats are here on the Team 980 tonight. NBA last night. Playoffs continued. No major surprises, especially in the Memphis-Oklahoma City series. We saw the Thunder wallop the Grizzlies again. This was only a 19-point win. We said we'd talk about that game if the Thunder or if the Grizzlies could get it. I think we said within 10. I'll make it 15. So we're not going to talk about that one. Quickly, the Bucks-Pacers game was interesting. The Bucks made this one interesting late, and then right when they got to the point where they were in striking distance, the Pacers just put down the gas one more time. We're able to close this out. This is a chippy series. Pacers are up 2-0 at home. Do you think they have enough to hold on here and steal one? I mean, either win it four straight home wins in a game seven against a guy like Giannis, who is having an absolutely ridiculous series. He's 34-18-7 in the loss yesterday. Or can the Bucks come back here when Dame knocks the rest of the rust off?
I mean, this is tough. I think the Pacers end up winning in six, to be honest. They just have they're just too much. I like their bench. I don't think the Bucks have that much coming off of the bench. And then defensively, they're just not where they like used to be. Like those guys that they had, the Drew Holidays of the world, the Jay Crowders of the world, like some of those guys were tone setters, and they just don't have that the same makeup that they used to have. So I think in order for them to win, they're going to have to like defend. And in today's modern NBA, not a lot of teams like to defend.
No. And, you know, the Pacers are not exactly a defensive juggernaut.
Nope.
But the Pacers are tough, man. Like, that's the thing about this Pacers team. And I'm not surprised because I know who their coach is. Rick Carlisle is a toughness type of dude. He does not tolerate nonsense. And, like, dudes like Nembhard, Nesmith, like, Jairus Walker, like, these dudes get after it. Obviously, TJ McConnell. And then, you know, Halliburton is seen. You know, the whole story of yesterday was there's a poll in The Athletic that who's the most overrated NBA player voted on by NBA players. It was Tyrese Halliburton. He comes out 21 points, 12 assists on 8 of 19 shooting, and he's talking smack to Lillard. He's doing a little Dame time deal, pointing at his watch. And, like, he's no punk. Like, this Indiana team has a toughness to them that I think that while the Bucks have some, obviously, guys like Giannis who have championship experience, like, you're not going to push his team around. And I think that's a really important thing. It's why they did so well in the play-in tournament or the in-season tournament last year. It's why they've been a pain in the butt in the playoffs multiple years. And like, this is who they are. And I'm actually not surprised at this, that they're up 2-0.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happened when the series goes to Milwaukee. But The Bucks got some stuff to figure out, man.
What happened? What happened to your Lakers last night? They won. Their defense turned into an absolutely ridiculous unit. 94-85. Is it happy 1996, Anthony?
Yeah, I think the first quarter, as Luka did last the last game, he got out to a hot start. But at the same token, when Minnesota made those adjustments, the Lakers didn't necessarily know what to do. The offense was all out of sorts. J.J. Redick's calling timeouts and, like, you know, ripping the guys.
Yeah.
So, and even if you just look at the team, they scored 60 points over the last three quarters. And to be honest, Minnesota really should probably be up 2-0 in this series. But offensively, they struggled down the stretch of the game yesterday. They didn't hit the shots that they hit in game one. So it's 1-1, but it's been ugly. And to be honest, I think Minnesota has outplayed L.A. in seven of the eight quarters.
Enough, though, that they got it done. 20-13 fourth quarter. Like, defensively, they locked in, or Minnesota missed shots, whichever one you want to put it in. You know, we were wondering if a guy like Dalton Connect would come in and provide a little more offense, and he did not play at all for the Lakers. Minnesota got basically nothing out of anyone not named Julius Randle or Anthony Edwards. No other double-figure scorers. Rudy Gobert took five shots. But on the offensive side for LA, the one thing that I was really looking forward to seeing was the assist numbers for Luka and LeBron, mm-hmm. Because they were held, one for Luka and two for LeBron or something like that in game one. Luka, 9 assists to go with his 31 points and 12 rebounds. LeBron, 21, 11 rebounds and 7 assists. So at least their playmakers are making plays. They got to hit more shots. I think they need more ball movement. JJ's trying to get them moving. But it is... This series is going to be a bloodbath going down the stretch here.
Yeah, they want to play too much ISO. Like, Luka, like, he loves, you know, the one-on-one ISO with Rudy. And in the first quarter, it was working. But, like, the second, third, fourth, it wasn't as effective.
I feel like if I'm JJ, I go to Luka, and I say this in front of the team as well, is just go, look, we know you can do that anytime. We got to get everyone else involved early. And sometimes you have to... Instead of just saying, hey, let's just let Luka cook early, you got to get other guys going because it helps the flow of the rest of the game. And then if you get in a point where your offense is in a bad way, you just, all right, let's stop all this fancy movement stuff and give the ball to Luka Doncic and, hey, everyone else get the hell out the way and let's run some offense. Magic and Celtics. Boston leads the series 1-0. This is probably going to be a very physical game. It was pretty physical in game one because of some of the physicality. Jason Tatum got injured. He is doubtful tonight. So that is something to watch for sure. Heat Cavaliers, the Cavs are a way better team. And then you got Rockets Warriors tonight. Houston favored by 4.5. They were underdogs in game one. I think that is interesting. But the Rockets trying to avoid falling in a 2-0 hole, Anthony. Do you think they can do it?
I think they can do it,
but
I'm interested. I'm interested to see how Steph Curry holds up. Like what he did last game, the fact that you were beating him up, running him around the court the entire time. He has to do that for 4 to 7 games. So I'm interested to see. And he's been here before. I'm not going to act like Steph hasn't been here.
This is his life.
Yeah,
he knows. And by the way, if it gets too much, one, they will whine like hell to the officials until they start making calls.
Yeah,
Steph Curry. But two, Draymond or Jimmy will kill someone.
I think Draymond would lead that. he start first. He will set the tone.
Yeah, and the thing is, Draymond, I think, knows if I can start a fight and get it in, not a fight, but like if I get a technical, now the whistles are going to get tighter. And that might be worth doing. And Draymond understands that. And by the way, so does Jimmy. So does Steve Kerr. So does, I think, that Warriors organization. All right, that is our show for today. With one exception, we're going to give you the latest on the world of women's sports. It's presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you want. Wawa with customizable roasted and crispy chicken sandwiches. After that, you're Charlie and Dave. Nats baseball coming at you here on the Team 980.